short history of the Holy Roman Empire. Pope Boniface VIII, Part 3, The End. At the height of his power, Boniface again attempted to reassert his power over the kings of the earth. In England, he challenged Edward's the right to rule over us, Scotland, with which he was at war, declaring that Scotland was a papal fief and had been since ancient antiquity. A very questionable statement. The English Parliament responded by informing the Pope that the king had no obligation to heed the papal see in matters of temporal authority. The statement was a clear reaction against the days of Gregory VII and Innocent III, wherein such authority was held to exist at a mere pleasure of the Pope. Of course, Gregory VII and Innocent III were wiser than Boniface, and Boniface didn't press the issue. Indeed, he couldn't, for Philip was about to lay his hands upon the ancient frontiers once claimed by the emperor alone. This is the King of France. In 1301, Philip became embroiled in a dispute with the French bishop named Bernard Sasset. He had the bishop brought up on charges, which many believe were false. He was tried and imprisoned. He then asked or ordered the Pope to degrade the bishop. Boniface was outraged. For many years, clergy was not to be tried by secular courts, let alone to be defrocked by an ambitious king. Boniface is said not to have bothered examining the case when he condemned the trial and those responsible. The response of the king was staggering. A document was circulated declaring that the king should expand his frontiers to Rome and denied the papacy any and all secular power. If the church had gone too far in declaring the secular power, Philip now went too far interfering in church affairs. He seized church property, yet still sent legates to Rome to ask for money towards a crusade. When the legate arrived with a negative answer, Philip then had the legate arrested and tried as a traitor. In reaction to these extreme measures by Philip, Boniface issued a bull in December calling for a council to be held in Rome in which the king and his advisors were called to present an account of their actions. The bull brazenly asserted the authority of the church over kings and princes of the earth. When the bull arrived in France, a forgery was made which exaggerated the claims of Boniface, thus making it sound more audacious. The bull then evoked the sympathy for the king and was thrown into a fire by the king's chief advisor, whom many believe forged the document. Philip then called the French Parliament and other representatives to convene a council of their own, which asserted that the French crown had no allegiance to the church. In a letter to the Pope, Philip began by addressing the Pope as your infatuated majesty, end of quote. It was to be tit for tat, and Boniface was not willing to let Philip be more arrogant than himself. So he called a council on his own, which convened on Halloween Day, 1302. The result of the council was a bull entitled Unum Sanctum. This bull, one of the most infamous of bulls of history, despite the fact that it presented nothing new. Everything that was presented in the bull had been proclaimed before, but never so blatantly. In years past, the blasphemous assumptions were disguised in a barrage of theological streams of thought, such as the Vicar of Christ represents Christ, the Church is the spiritual authority. Therefore, submission to the Pope and the Church is essential, since submission to Christ is required for salvation. Boniface did not attempt to water down the underlying doctrine. He states flatly in the last lines of the bull, quote, every human creature is subject to the Roman pontiff. This we declare, say, define, and pronounce to be altogether necessary for salvation, end of quote. Thus, for the first time, the church clearly, formally, and brazenly declared that no one can be saved without blind submission to the Pope. Again, it must be asserted that this was not a new teaching. Been taught by Innocent III, who declared that every cleric must obey the Pope, even if what he commands is evil. But his statements were directed at the clergy, and never formalized in a bull. Now, in formal writing, was a document that could be held before an uneducated general public. It quickly became the most widely known and derided bull in medieval history. The legates who carried the bull were arrested by Philip and imprisoned. Furthermore, at his own council, he ordered that Boniface be called to account in a general council. Among the charges leveled against Boniface were sexual immorality, simony, heresy, sorcery, incest, and murder of his predecessor. So the battle lines are obviously drawn. Boniface now faced a difficult decision. His words would clearly not alone prevail against Philip. Philip would not back down easily. Boniface was faced with admitting that he could not be both emperor and pope. He needed an ally who commanded an army, and that ally would have to be the emperor-designate Albert. To this end, Boniface was now willing to recognize Albert as emperor and coronate him if he would come to his aid. On April the 30th, 1303, Albert made an oath of allegiance to the pope and promised that none of his sons would be elected king without papal consent. In essence, he acknowledged that the papacy was supreme over the emperor, that the office of the emperor existed at the will of the pope. He had earned his crown, but at the expense of the imperial office. Despite the emperor's humbling, this was a hollow victory. Albert was to be made emperor by Boniface, but Boniface would lose his throne. The emperor was of no help to Boniface when one of the most notorious acts in medieval history unfolded in September of that same year. Boniface was prepared to formally announce the excommunication of Philip and his colleagues. He personally, as Vicar of Christ, would damn Philip's eternal soul. Far from the simple punishment that shunned an unrepentant sinner, as was once leveled against the great Theodosius, excommunication now meant nothing less than eternal damnation. Ambrose and the ancients would never have envisioned such a thing, but neither would they have envisioned why the excommunication would never occur. Boniface was at his retreat at Agni when terror besieged the city. Philip's advisor, William of Nocart, had devised a plot with Philip's approval: capture the pope and forcibly bring him before a church council to be deposed. On September the 7th, 1303, mercenaries appeared before the walls of the city, led by William of Nocart. The estimated number of troops varied from 500 to as many as 2,000, mostly horsemen. The gates of the city were treacherously opened by the pope's own captain of the guard, and the onslaught began. The soldiers poured through the streets and sacked the palaces. They were joined by the Colonna family, who had suffered as much at the pope's hands, and Scurria Colonna himself struck down the archbishop of the city. The blood of many, civilian and clergy, were spilled when Scurria appeared before Boniface's palace with the demands of Philip: surrender, restore the dignity of the Colonna family, and resign your office. Boniface looked down upon his enemies and refused. The storming of the papal palace began almost immediately. Soldiers broke in and offered the lives of any who would tell them where the pope was hiding. Resistance was relatively meek, for the soldiers far outnumbered Boniface's guards. Nevertheless, bloodstained floors of the palace were scurried and broke into the audience chamber. There he was greeted by the pope, dressed in full regalia, sitting arrogantly on his throne. Boniface may have gambled that they would not dare to kill a pope, or he may have truly been willing to die as he professed. In either case, he defied them, even as they stood before him with drawn swords. Scurria demanded his resignation, but Boniface refused. Scurria was ready to strike the head of the pope when Nogarth entered the court and intervened. He told Scurria that Boniface must be brought back alive to Philip to stand trial before the council. Scurria was forced to back down. Instead, he sacked the papal palace, and the goods and treasures it housed were either destroyed or carried away as booty. Symbolic of the event was an image of the overturned and broken urn, which allegedly contained the milk of the Virgin Mary. Bloodstained floors and papal sanctuary, along with the milk of the Virgin. The death of Boniface, the image of the pope being taken by force, stirred even apathetic members of Agni. The Orsini family had no great love for Boniface, but they had no desire to see what might befall the city that allowed such a tragedy to occur. Many of the mercenaries in Nogarth's service had already left with their booty, and denizens of Agni suffered as much at their hands. Now it was their turn to rise up. 3 days after the sack of their city, they attacked the remaining soldiers. Soldiers were driven from the city, and the pope was physically rescued. But it was too late to rescue his spirit. Boniface was a broken man. Whatever happened to him over the few days that he spent in prison had broken his will. The once arrogant pope, who had stood before armed soldiers willing to die, was now said to beat his head against the wall and chew on his arm like a dog. He died a month later from injuries that he had received. As the prophecy of Celestine said, he leapt to the throne like a fox, he reigned like a lion, and he died like a dog. Even as the storm had raged at the coronation of Boniface, a storm raged at at his funeral. Storms are prophetic for his reign, for like a storm which left destruction in his wake. In many ways, Boniface was an unimportant pope. He brought nothing new to the papacy, was really more corrupt and power-hungry than many before him, but his reign marked, both symbolically and literally, a Rubicon in the history of the Middle Ages. Even as the popes humbled the emperors, the popes had been humbled by a king. They were soon to come under the dominion and control of the French. The emperors had taken 500 years to fall from prominence. The papacy, but 100. It was now the kings of Europe themselves who held the supreme power. But it was a power they couldn't wield without destroying the unity of the Holy Roman Empire and the continent it embraced. To be sure, they tried to maintain this unity, but their rejection of both emperor and pope would further cause the empire to crumble. It could not long endure as a divided kingdom, nominally held together by two powers, and the kings cared nothing for it at all. Philip had sought to become emperor. He could not claim the title, so he claimed the power of it. With him, the papacy was to be subjected, but it was to him that the fall of the Holy Roman Empire began to come to fruition. Seeds had been planted in the division of the empire with the humbling of Henry by the papacy and many other factors too numerous to be listed. But in his own arrogance, Philip had begun the disintegration of the only force that could hold Europe together. For better or worse, the corrupted church was all that kept Europe united. With its further degradation over the years to come, call for the Reformation would signal the end of the empire as a unifying force in the rise of the modern age. So next time, we'll begin this new section with, of course, Philip of France, the would-be emperor. And of course, he's going to have some interesting people involved, including Benedict the 11th. Now, the sources for this is Religion and the Holy Roman Empire by Ferguson, Before France and Germany by Gary, The Oxford History of Medieval Europe by Holmes, The Papal Encyclopedia by Bunsen, The Capetian Kings of France, 987-1328 by Butler and Adams, French History, Volume 1 by Guizot, Barbarian Invasions by Delbruck, Early Germans by Todd, and The Rise and Fall of the Holy Roman Empire by Criswell. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.